Hey, welcome back to yet another episode of the Terry Summers Podcast. She jostled in rhythm and rhyme before the likes of the rapping politicos of Hamilton. Hang here with me today and hear about the character I played in a musical that ended up changing my address, not to mention my summers, as we get in sync with the beat of the Beehive rapping governor. You know, they say that time flies, and I am here to attest to that. It just sort of dawned on me recently as I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine, Ben Tyler, that we will be hearing from here on the Terry Summers Podcast coming up in a few weeks. But that I have been in Arizona since the fall of 1990. And that is, my friends, 30 years. 30 years. I was born and raised in Southern California, and I still consider myself to be a Southern California gal. That's my home. It feels like home in some ways when I go back, and then actually, truthfully, in others, it doesn't feel familiar at all. But in the fall, late summer, early fall, I had some friends over in Arizona, a dairy farming family, and I was visiting them as well as visiting my mother, who had moved over to Arizona. We had also another friend that was living here, and my father had passed away not terribly long before that in 87, so she was making a change in her life. And anyway, long story short, which when I say that, don't believe me. Long story short, actually, it rolls off my tongue really well. I'm not sure why I can't hold to it. But long story short, I was headed back out home to California and then was going to do a short mini tour in some college campuses. I traveled then and still do with an inspirational comedic one-woman show. I saw in, actually a friend of mine saw in the local newspaper that they were having auditions for A Christmas Carol at Phoenix Theater. And you know, I love that show. It's one of the very first shows I ever did professionally at South Coast Repertory in Costa Mesa. And so it was just on a whim that on my way out, car packed and everything, I thought, you know, I'm just going to stop off. It'll be fun to audition. I kind of love auditioning. I don't know if all actors are like that or not. So when I auditioned and popped in, I auditioned for a gentleman by the name of Alan Pruitt, which you will also be hearing soon. I had a lovely interview with him. And I auditioned for him. We had a bunch of fun. People laughed. And he pulled me aside and he said, listen, I really would love for you to be in this. Knowing that you're heading out, I just can't imagine that you would pause on things, but I would love to have you playing the role of Mrs. Cratchit. And it just didn't take me but a second really to think if I could postpone some of those colleges. There were three performances that I was going to do. This would give me a chance to hang in the area for the holidays with my mom, and I ended up doing it. That we'll talk about another time, because that actually is the point that literally was the click of the button or the click of the switch that changed things for me. Because from that, there was a musical director in that helped make a connection with a gentleman that I referred to by the name of Ben Tyler, who's a stand-up comedian. I am as well. And through that means of connecting, he was getting ready to produce, along with his partners, Bruce and Candace Miles, he was getting ready to produce an original piece at their theater. They ran and operated a very successful theater in Tempe, Arizona called Mill Avenue Theater. And they were getting ready to produce a musical called Gov, G-U-V, inferring governor, Gov the Musical. And at that time, the gubernatorial situation in Arizona, and I say at that time, actually, I knew nothing of it. But as it turns out, the gubernatorial situation in Arizona has always had a bent for possibly disaster, controversy, crazy situations. But the state of Arizona had just been through quite a roller coaster with the impeachment of their governor, Evan Mecham. And it was a hurting state politically. Both for those that were conservative, Evan was a Republican, and those who were liberal, the Democratic Party. So at that time, they were in need of some laughter, right? So these genius people that I now hold dear in my heart, but knew nothing of at the time, had written and were gathering together along with this musical director and Ben and Candace, and the musical director's name is Jim Caldy, and his wife at the time, Diane, all collectively were contributing to the pot of creativity for this musical. Where do I fit into that? Ben met me, knew that I had a funny bone, knew that I was a comedian, learned that I was, knew that I was also an actress. I was hanging in town, what was going to be temporary for the holiday season. And he asked me if I would be at all interested in auditioning for the role of Rose Mofford. Rose Mofford at that time was governor, but she became governor only because of the impeachment of Evan Mecham. Rose Mofford had been the Secretary of State, and I knew nothing of her. He explained her appearance to me a little bit. My brow went up, like, how is it that you're connecting the dots? But I met with him. I showed up at a quote-unquote audition. I had the feeling that he maybe already had his eye on me for this role, but the audition was hilarious and one of the most fun things that I have ever done, because it really required me to memorize nothing. There were no lines, because here the joke is that Rose Mofford, not really wanting to be governor, she wasn't inclined to all the things that governors do. She didn't want to have to make speeches, and she didn't say a lot, and that was kind of one of the ongoing jokes about her. So she also took a spill once and fell off the back of the podium, and so there was lots of information and speculation going on about why she might have had a hard time getting things out. But the audition consisted of me walking up to a podium and just not having anything to say. And that for me was this wide open bag of do what it is you have in your pocket. And we just had the best time. And he said, "You're in like Flynn. We'd love to have you." So that started this journey in a show that represented the political scene in the state of Arizona. Mind you, I'm from California. I knew nothing about it, but it extended my stay in Arizona at least for 6 weeks. We were going to rehearse for three and then a typical run of about 3 weeks. It was a ton of fun being part of an original piece like that, which I have had another opportunity to do, a couple actually, but you're kind of learning on the fly and things are being changed and modified. But it was a great group of people. I loved them immediately. Of course, they were all brand new to me. And we ended up having a show that blew the doors off of the theater. I don't know that anybody knew that it was going to have that kind of success. Like I mentioned, it was slotted for a 3-week, if I'm correct in my memory. Again, we'll have Ben on and we'll review some of this. I'm not going to spill all the beans about all of that to have you listen to me that I could be making mistakes. But I recall it was 30 years ago, people. But I recall it was about 3 weeks of a run that we were going to be doing. It was such a huge mega hit that I think we were shell-shocked. It was a cute little theater upstairs in an old historic brick building in downtown Tempe. And it was in the round. It had a vomitorium. I had not ever personally heard of that term, even though I had been in the theater. But a vomitorium is the little opening section that divides the seating that you can exit out. And I'm sure there's a much more professional description for it. But it was separated by a vomitorium, and we use that as entrance and exits. It had just a little teeny tiny dressing room that we all sat at and just stumbled and moved over each other in costume changes. We all played multiple characters, but a couple of us, I think most of us actually had a predominant one that we were playing. And as I mentioned, I was playing Rose Mofford. Rose Mofford, first of all, just to back up to her a little bit, a good old gal in Arizona. No matter your political affiliation, everyone loved Rose Mofford. She was tall in stature and probably what they would refer to as big boned, if that had anything to do with Ben's casting of me. He needs to confess. But she played softball. I think it was semi-pro softball. She had been in the political scene up until not long before her passing, 50 years or greater. And she was a darling of the state. And again, everyone loved her. But like I said, there were some funny things to her. First of all, she was striking. And, you know, let me say this too. She was the first female governor, you know, kind of by default, but the first female governor in the state of Arizona. She had a beehive that could make you woozy if you were atop of it. It was this tall, platinum, white beehive, and she wore false eyelashes that were super present and a bright cherry red lipstick. Kind of looked like a madam, but she was striking if she came into a room. So for the comedic sense of it all, they had a wig built. Actually, there were two, maybe even three different renditions of the wig that they had built for me. Just super tall, comedic, you know, cartoonish. I wore double sets, sometimes triple sets of lashes, and then the lipstick. I borrowed. So the theater was not an equity contracted theater. They were a non-union theater, which basically means you're not bound by salaries and contracts and some of the union kind of rules. With the theater, we were going to be paid, and there was I think they worked off of a percentage of the house. It was very generous, and we had to kind of make do, you know, with things because the budget was low and they just wanted to get this up and running. And it was kind of bring what you have if you can come up with your own costume. And so my mom had this, I borrowed from my mother, this kind of pleated blue skirt and a jacket and wore a white blouse. And earmark that for a second because I'm going to come back to that if I can remember in just a minute. So when we had opening night, the place was packed, and it was filled with people that were not necessarily theater goers. And over the course of our run, it proved to be the same thing. People came out, once they heard about it, they came out because they were caught up in this crazy story of the impeachment of Evan Mecham. One of the reasons, I believe, right off the bat for the success of the show does rest on the fact that, like money being dumped into somebody's lap, when they had a casting call for Evan Mecham, there just so happened to be a retired Air Force fighter pilot that lived in the valley. And he, Dick Jonas is his name, that lived in the valley. And he was and is a dead ringer for Evan Mecham. So right away, that's a biggie. But add to that, that he was, I believe the term is like a songster. Like he traveled, had his albums, he played guitar with the military, for the military, on his own. So in walks a guy, no experience at all in theater, but in walks a guy that lights up a grin that is the dead ringer for Evan Mecham's infamous grin. And he can sing. He's musical. And it's a musical. So it was like, bing, 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 bing. It just, you know, the stars were in their favor. And when he came out on opening night, the crowd went nuts. Just lost it. I think it was a combination of hearing a cheer mixed with a gasp, mixed with a I might throw up. It was shock and awe because they just, I think they thought, did they get Evan Mecham to be in this musical? And from there, it just took off. I had the thrill of my life being a comedian to come out and stand at a podium. Remember, not really knowing her, taking Ben, the writer and director, taking Ben, one of the writers, word for it, that this is who she is. And that, you know, when he said just have trouble giving a speech or getting anything out of your mouth. So when I did that and just drew a breath and hesitated and turned another direction and tried again, just that, the audience also lost it. So in my mind, you know, as an actress, you're in the moment, you're staying connected to the piece. But I also had this conversation going on like, oh my goodness, is this fun? And folks, it was like that every night. At the end of our 3-week run, we clearly knew we had a hit because almost every night, and I'm not exaggerating, we had some form of the news media. Once they got a hold of it, we had some form of the news media downstairs when we were leaving as a cast and as the audience left, grabbing some of the stories from the audience. We were in every newspaper you can think of. There were pictures of myself and the gentleman that played Evan Mecham and others plastered. I mean, plastered in the newspapers and on the news. You know, I would hear from my mom, you were on the news tonight. I said, I know the cameras were in the house. And so it was like it was surreal. And it was just, wait a second. I hung out in Arizona a little longer to play Mrs. Cratchit in A Christmas Carol. And actually, side note, for those of you who know me, you know I love snow. It doesn't make any sense that I've never lived anywhere with snow. But that Christmas, actually, it snowed in Arizona and I watched the snow fall. I really thought I was in a magical world. I didn't know what was hitting me. And of course, had been cast in this other show that was getting ready to open at the same time. So we were floored by the success of it. And also so thrilled for the owners of this theater, for Bruce and Candace and Ben. I mean, it was just like, what? And I can't wait to visit with Ben and just reminisce a little bit about those times with him. But they sat us down at the end of coming up close to closing weekend, quote unquote, quote, quote, closing weekend. They sat us down and they asked us if we could consider extending the run. I mean, it was a no-brainer, right? For producing artistic directors and writers of a hit show to appeal to the very same cast. You know, there was magic going on in this cast. And I, you know, start thinking, wow, well, I can. I don't have anything calling me urgently. I postponed these one-woman speaking gigs in colleges. And although they're enjoyable, what do they say? A bird in the hand is worth two in the bush or something like that. But so we all signed up again. And that re-upping turned into a regular thing. We were re-upping frequently. And I think I just recently came across a magazine article that says Gov extends. And I think we took a jump like from, we opened in January of 1991, if I'm not mistaken, started rehearsing at the tail end of 1990, opened in 1991, January or February, and then extended. And I think the last thing I just saw a newspaper clipping that we had then made an extension all the way into July. And this went on like that, folks, for, hold on to your seats, 2 years. 2 years. I had never dreamed, in my wildest dreams, I had never considered the possibility of this kind of success, of this homegrown show. And we even took it on the road and hit some major cities in the state of Arizona, outside of Phoenix, of course. And this group of people, night after night, initially, you know, all but I believe Monday night, we might have had a Tuesday off periodically, but we just did a ton of shows together, and the audiences never waned. It was just sellout performances. And at one point in the process, see, the way the show was set up is the first half of the show was historical, which also is hysterically funny, that it goes back to when Arizona became a state, and just through the telling of the character, the lead character, Sam Steiger, if I recall his name correctly, Bruce Miles played him. He sort of, as a historian, told the story of the state of Arizona, and particularly with emphasis on the crazy stuff that happened with the governor. So this situation of being impeached was not the first time there'd been a shakeup around the governor of the state of Arizona. That was the first half, the first act, if you will. And the second act, or second half, it was often referred to as maybe a football game, like people would say, when's halftime? Like I mentioned, this was not a theater-going audience. And they were people that were just eager to laugh about the pain of the political situation in the state of Arizona. The second half was current, whatever the situation currently was with the impeachment, how it led to the impeachment of Evan Mecham, how Rose fell into that, and all of the other characters. There were a lot of political characters represented in the show. The beauty of the way they set that up is they left it open. And I don't know if they intended this way, anticipating that the gubernatorial situation would continue in its own version of shenanigans, or if it just happened to be that they it was just a gut thing that they did. But the second act was rewritten as there were new political updates in the news. And believe you me, there were. Like I said, I don't want to break down the whole show right now, because when Ben comes back, when Ben joins me, excuse me, I know that we will. But they changed the second act. And you know what? The same crowd of people that filled their seats wanted to come back and see that, plus new ones. We also had political figures sneaking in to see the show, wanting to see who's playing me. It was crazy. Goldwater came to the show. I can list and list, but Rose Mauffer did not. And here's the deal there. She reached out to me. Her people did. She reached out to me and said, and this was after running a year, she said, "I would love to take you to lunch." And I was like, "Whatever." Oh my gosh. I mean, she had this kind of deep, husky voice, so we sort of had that in common. And she said, meet me. I'm trying to remember. I think, no, you know what? I think she picked me up. No, she didn't. I just got to ride in her car. Yeah. She said, meet me at the Beef Eater. And the Beef Eater is no longer in existence, but it was old school Arizona steakhouse, high end, like you would picture in Hollywood, you know, where the who's who would go. Meet me at the Beef Eater. So I showed up at the Beef Eater, and I go inside, and in her own booth. This was dedicated to her. I don't think that there was a placard or anything, but the house manager of the restaurant took me over and said, she's in her booth. There sat a version of the gal that I had been looking at in the mirror every night as I got ready for a year. I mean, it was chill bumpy. Older than me. I think my skin might have been a little tighter than hers. I don't know, maybe not. But she even, remember I told you to earmark that part in the story about what I wore of my mother's? She had on, I'm not yanking your chain, she had on the very, very same suit. I don't know what the color blue would be. Like, it's not quite navy, maybe royal. Maybe it's royal blue. We'll go with that. Royal blue pleated skirt with kind of little sailor goldish buttons on the jacket and the collar, and a white shirt on. And this here, I thought that the wigs that they had built for me were comical and exaggerated. Not so much. This huge beehive and these sparkling eyes with dark black spider leg kind of eyelashes and this vivid red lipstick. And I had chills all over me. And I kind of, you know, was in a mode of pinching myself anyway, because so much happened to me in that period of time that I was in Arizona, had been in this show. Had an agent that I had connected with, that several agents actually, because there were some that I knew from my agent in California, but an agent that immediately started getting me work. And I was like a big fish in a small pond. I was booking Monday night movies of the week and national television commercials, and also just recognizable just about everywhere I went. And I'll get back to that. I have a fun story for that. But so we sat down and we had lunch, and she was so charming. And she shared with me the reason that she did not come to the show. She, in her understanding, because again, mind you, it's on the news all the time, Every time there's a change, every time there's a swell in something and it's reflected in our show, they're back taking pictures or, you know, it's craziness. She gathered that there was a lot of ribbing of Evan Mecham, which there was. There, to be fair, we ribbed pretty much everyone, her included, but she was mildly addressed that way. But she gathered that in the ribbing that it was making fun of him and all of that, and that she sensed because of the stories that were told and how the show came to be, that a lot of it had to do with the impeachment and then her stepping in. She just wanted to live above board and didn't want to be seen there. She assumed that the news was there all the time, and she was correct. And she didn't want it to look like she was sticking her elbow, you know, in the side of Evan Mecham. So she was just a really above board gal and tall, like I had mentioned, definitely a striking presence. And she had friends, one of which was Eddie Basha. Eddie Basha befriended me when he came to see the musical. And Eddie Basha was a good friend of hers, and he shared with her how much he loved my performance and, you know, my playing her. And so she thanked me for that I was kind, and just said, I hope you understand that I just don't feel good about coming. Who knew? Who knew that we would continue on yet for another year? And then plus, I went on to other things, and there was a moment where they brought it back again with another gal, and or maybe more than that. But I sit and think, particularly right now, when it is so hot, I do not know of the temperatures that are referred to when we use the term hell, but you know, they're right around there, definitely. We are dealing with record-breaking temps right now, and in the neighborhood of anywhere, they say so lightly and with a toss of the hand and the hair, that we will hit maybe 117, 120, yeah. 117, maybe 120. When I'm sitting in this heat, and mind you, we're coming up on knocking at the door within just a month or two of me being here pretty much consistently, work back and forth between California too, but for 30 years. I think back on what in the heck brought me here. Because truthfully, folks, I never would have chosen it. I just never would have. And I've stayed a lot longer than I ever thought I would too. But that show, I get chill bumps when I think about that time. It was just so much fun. And who saw it coming? And it's really one of those stories where you let life kind of lead and, you know, check in with yourself and make sure you're still game for what's going on and just keep going. I had been friends prior to this with Alice and Cheryl Cooper, and they lived in the Valley and were big supporters of me. And he and Cheryl and I believe one of their kids went to go see Wayne's World together when it came out. And for those of you who have seen it, you know Alice is featured in that and makes an appearance. Well, we were leaving Alice in a baseball cap. So, you know, to be fair, he was a little bit disguised, but you kind of know him. So we were coming out of the movie theater after seeing Wayne's World, and we were parting, heading to our cars. And just before we parted, we hear in the parking lot someone yell, "Hey!" Assuming they're going to say Cooper or Coop or Alice or I'm not worthy. Instead, it was Rosie. They recognized me from playing Rose Mofford, and I'm walking out with the father of Shock Rock, and they're hollering at me. Things like this happened all the time. And you know, I mean, there is always room for a little stroke of the ego and a little pat on the back when you're a performer. No matter how much you may have a handle on holding all that at bay, it is lovely to be recognized and appreciated for what you do. And it was just a door opening time. Out of that show, because of the popularity of Rose Mofford, the writers, Candace, Miles in particular, and I do believe Ben contributed to it, if I'm not mistaken, decided to do like a sideshow, a shoot off of that around me, knowing that I had my own comedy and what have you. And it was called Terry, A Rose by Another Name. It was super fun. And so there were other things that happened from that. It moved me essentially to Arizona. And from that experience and other work that followed, it just kind of made it hard to go back to California. Not that I didn't want to go back to California, but again, that whole bird in the hand is worth two in the bush as an actress in California, though that's where my career started. It was a different environment and a larger pool of people. And, you know, they treated the whole business a little differently there because it was huge and mammoth and the heartbeat of the entertainment industry and television and film. But in Arizona, being so close to California, it provided a lot of opportunities like that. Also, back a little in the day, before Arizona kind of shot itself in the foot in terms of getting contracts and work for television and film, you know, things just weren't supported financially in the state and have waned and have had their ups and downs. But this was in one of its heydays, where there's just a lot of film work coming here, a lot of commercials, like I mentioned, national spot that I got here that you would have thought I would have had to have been in Los Angeles to get, multiple, commercial spots, a series of commercials that I, 2 years of doing, commercials for Honda and just a bunch of stuff. My voiceover career really flourished here. So Arizona has been really good to me. And though I gotta tell you, I hate the heat. I just can't stand it. And every summer I ask myself, how did I get here? Well, this year, looking at the calendar, it caused me to go back and remember, how did I get here? And it's a great story. And my life really unfolded from there. I met a bass player in one of the shows that I did at Mill Avenue following Gov. And he ended up being my first husband, and we were married for just shy of 12 years, and Jim Glendenning, he loved it here. You couldn't get him out of here. So that I kind of have sort of let the ball roll as I stay because of the things that have been provided to me in my career from here. Wonderful stuff. And even the Oprah Winfrey thing, which I'll share another time in detail, but some of you already know that story. That kind of came out of the workings here. Robin Sewell, who has a television show that she created from the magazine Arizona Highways, just a sharp go-getter of a gal. She befriended me from a show seeing me here in Phoenix and just said, I just want to be your cheerleader. I'm in your corner. I want to help you in whatever way I can. And out of that conversation came a conversation about having my own show. And then one thing led to another. And I was sitting pretty and ready to pitch a show when Oprah's offer hit the United States. And that, again, is a story for another time. But all I'm trying to say is from this drive back on the 10 freeway to California, and I'm going to pop in and audition for A Christmas Carol. And that conversation with Alan, that I'm sure he had no idea what was coming for me. He just took to me, enjoyed my audition, wanted me to be a part of it. But then from that short holiday stint came this opportunity that radically changed my life. And I am grateful. I see opportunity moving me. If it's not opportunity, it is desire. I so long to live in a climate where it gets a little chilly once in a while. And I do want to spare myself the heat. Now, my mom, for instance, I think she's bugged by the heat. She lives here, as I mentioned. And then my brother, Mark, moved over. She's more of a lizard. You know, I think it's the Native American in her. But I am resistant to the weather. So it does bring up this argument in my mind. How on earth did I get here? How did that happen? And it happened in a very beautiful way. And I'm really grateful as I look back over my life. You are going to love the conversation I have already had with Alan Pruitt, which will be coming up in a few weeks. What a darling, a lover of children. And then I will be interviewing Ben Tyler. Now, I got to just say this about Ben. Ben makes me laugh just about more than anyone I've ever met. He has access directly to my funny bone. So dry, sharp, quick sense of humor. So I can't wait to have him on, and we will be reminiscing about Gov. And if I can get a hold of everyone, I just might have everybody on my podcast. All those that first cast. And then we did have people that we had to replace over time and bring those folks in too. But we'll see. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. I just wanted to share with you today, as it tips 117 and I'm swearing at myself about how I got here, that I wanted to share with you how I did get here. I didn't say anything about the tag or the teaser. In the show, Rose Mofford, who I must have been playing her somewhere in her 60s, the character and the person slash the character, there was a rap song that she rapped. Of course, you know, that's the only real lines I had in the show. Everything was just these mutterings and these second looks and these funny faces. And, you know, just to get that kind of attention for not really having a script written for you was also super fun. But this this rap that happened in the second act was called Unconventional. It's sort of a play on the fact that Arizona is unconventional, also that they lost a lot of conventions because of everything that went on. So it was a hilarious time. I mean, it had the crotch grab and all that, a la Michael Jackson, but it sort of put her on the map. So she was a Politico rapper before the heat and hotness of Hamilton hit. I needed to make sure I made that connection. But it's been fun reminiscing. I don't know how you feel about reminiscing with times that you didn't live through, but you know, it's something. It's something to try, right? Reminisce with those you don't know. I thank you. I really don't have anything else to say. There'll be more to come about this time and this show. Google it. I think you can even get a video of it on Amazon. Gov the Musical, G-U-V the Musical. So check it out. Give Rose Mofford a look, the good old gal. And I will be back here with you in some way, shape, or form next week. Thanks for hanging with me. You know, I Brian will wring my neck if I don't remind you to hit that subscribe button. So that kind of tells you that I really do just enjoy this. I would love for the podcast to grow. I'm hoping that it does grow, but it's not like immediately on my mind. It is the spending time with you and spending time with the people that are kind enough to let me interview them or share with them, exchange with them. It's really what floats my boat. But listen, people, you're going to get Brian on my back if you don't hit that subscribe button, so that you don't miss a single episode of the Terry Summers podcast. And then share this with your friends if you wanna. I mean, I would love to have a lot of people come along, if you recall one of my earlier episodes. And then leave me some 5-star reviews to help me stand out from the pack. Brian keeps saying, stand out from the pack. Have them help you stand out from the pack. So he's bossy, but I would appreciate that. And then comments actually on the Apple podcast, wherever you can leave a comment, that would just be super helpful, insightful to me. And then the other thing that I'm digging, and I have heard from a couple of you, is that you now have a chance to ask me that question you've always wondered about. And if you don't have one that you've always wondered about, you know, go get a cup of coffee and sit down and wonder for a while and come up with a question for me. And then go to terrysummers.com/podcast. If you don't know how to spell my version of Terry, it's TerreySummers.com/podcast, and leave me your questions and I will answer them in an upcoming episode. Isn't that cool? You can turn the tables on me. Thanks.